right, it is the Midnight Movie Reviews, helping you sort through all the movies that are coming out. It's Christmas time, so that means a lot of films are coming out. Some big ones came out this week. It's a big weekend, so we got a lot to talk about. We also covered the on-demand films for you as well. And anytime you have a question or a comment, a movie question or a comment, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can send your text to 24720. And check out Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com always join me, and we're doing that right now. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right, guys, we got to get to it. Let's actually talk. There's only two on-demand movies. Let's quickly talk about those. Eric, tell me about what you know about No Rest for the Wicked.
No Rest for the Wicked is a foreign film. It's a thriller, not a documentary, based on the terrorist bombing in Madrid from 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a reenactment of that event.
Okay.
Which I have not seen, but I've heard some pretty decent things about.
Okay, No Rest for the Wicked, available on demand. And then Struck by Lightning.
Yeah, Struck by Lightning, which I believe is going to be, I think, opening here maybe next month at some point. It stars Chris Colfer from Glee, and he's struck and killed by lightning, according to the IMDb page. And then he talks about how he blackmailed his classmates into contributing to his literary magazine.
He's dead. And,
he's dead, but okay. a great cast in this thing. I mean, aside from Chris Colfer, you got Christina Hendricks.
Whoa!
There you go.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Okay.
So Nick is leaving the show right
now.
Yeah,
I'll see you later.
All right, Colin, this is on you and me. Rebel Wilson, very funny. Dermot Mulroney, Sarah Hyland from Modern Family, Allison Janney. Good cast, a really good cast on this thing.
But it will open in theaters at some point in January.
Yeah, I think it's getting a small release at some point.
But it's out on demand right now.
Yes.
Okay, we've got a ton of movies to talk about this week. But the first one, I think Colin's the only one who saw it. you're going to handle. They got some Cirque du Soleil movie.
Yeah.
Cirque du Soleil, Worlds Away. I didn't see it, and I know Eric, you didn't see it either, right?
No.
All right, Colin, tell us about the Cirque du Soleil movie.
All right, well, this is a 3D performance film of the Cirque du Soleil show that's been popular all over the world. For those who don't know, it's part circus, part performance art, part stunt show, part dance, and I personally have never seen the show live. Eric, have you?
I've seen not this. Where is this one set, Colin? Do you know?
This one is filmed. They went all over the place for this.
Okay.
In the credits, they went to Vegas. They went to New York. Okay. They went to New Zealand. They went everywhere. So
I've seen at least four, maybe even five shows in Vegas of Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm assuming that the performances are all sort of connected together with some kind of narrative to it, or
some of them have either a narrative, like the Zumanity one at the New York Casino has like sort of a sexual theme to it. There's the O at the Bellagio that's all sort of water based. There is an Elvis one. There's a Beatles one.
Right.
Yeah. So everyone sort of has either its own theme or a narrative to it.
Okay, well, this one does, too, and everything you just described, they pretty much have in this movie. There's an Elvis segment, there's some Beatles, there's water stuff, and, you know, it sort of tells, you know, kind of a very, you know, loose, small story about a woman who falls for a performer named the Aerialist, and, you know, when she sort of, she's, you know, normal small-town girl goes to a circus and sort of meets him there, and then sort of falls through the rabbit hole, as it were, and she tries to find him through a series of, you know, circus tents, and so that's how we're sort of introduced to these many, you know, sort of staggering and amazing physical acts that you will ever see. But you're not really going to this thing for the story, and, so like I said, the movie isn't a single performance, but it's sort of, you know, it's sort of all over the place. And it's 3D, and of course it's from James Cameron, you know, it's, the 3D is pretty awesome in it. So I don't know. This is kind of a mixed thing for me because on the one hand, I'm amazed, you know, just by watching Cirque du Soleil and what these performers can do and just sort of marveling, like, how, you know, just sitting here and thinking, God, how does one exercise their neck muscles to the point where somebody can hang from somebody's neck?
Right.
You know, stuff like that. I really want to see the show live. You know, that's what the movie made me want to do. Because as you're watching it as a film, the way it's edited is that there's no real sense of danger there. You know, so it's almost by default, the movie has a major flaw to it in the fact that it's a movie and not a performance. So I always kind of felt like I was watching Cirque du Soleil, but not really experiencing it. And I think that they really wanted you to experience it, you know, as close to a performance as you can. And there are moments when I really, you know, where I felt like it was you know, I was there, but not enough to the point where I could, you know, say that, you know, you should really rush out and see this movie. It's one of those things. It's neither here nor there. I can't really say I recommend it or I don't recommend it. There's a lot of amazing things in it, but I felt like I sort of missed out on the real experience of seeing Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
I think if you want to take the kids to something different, and you've already seen Wreck-It Ralph, and you don't want to pay $14 to see Monsters, Inc. and 3D, this is a, you know, a good alternative choice out there.
Okay.
Just kind of comes up short a little bit, though.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the Cirque du Soleil Worlds Away. All right, guys, hang on. We got a lot of movies to talk about here. We're going to get to those in a second. If you have a question or a comment, it's 312-981-7200. Big weekend for the movies. There's a light in the sky. Nick DiGilio here, live from the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews with Eric and Colin. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's welcome the guys back to the show. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Hello.
All right, you guys have not... I can't believe you guys didn't see The Guilt Trip.
Sorry.
Sorry.
All right, I'm just surprised, that's all. Well, I'll quickly tell you about it. This stars Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand plays Seth Rogen's overbearing... and smothering a Jewish mom. And basically, the film is a road trip. Seth Rogen's going to go on a business trip to try and sell the project he's working on, and decides that he wants to take his mom on this trip as well to reunite her with a man whom was her first love before she met Rogen's father. She's long widowed. And before they meet. So they get into a car, and it's basically a road trip movie with Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand and all the characters and the things that they do on it. You know, it's your classic road trip movie with like a buddy comedy, but it just happens to be mom and son. I got to tell you, I'm shocked, but I enjoyed this movie. I honest to God, I am stunned at the fact that I'm recommending this film. I thought it was very funny. I thought the chemistry between Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand was terrific. It's the first time I've liked Barbara Streisand in a movie in, I don't know, a quarter of a century. And I thought a lot of the supporting roles were really funny. I thought the situations were good. It's not a perfect movie. It goes from A to B to C. You never know. You know, there's not one single thing that you can't predict in this film, but it's just really pleasant and it's funny. And the two people in the cast are very funny. The two leads are very, they have a great chemistry. They're very funny together. And, it's just a really charming, funny, sweet movie. I mean, it's, you know, it's frothy. It'll disappear from your mind a half an hour after you see it. But, while it's actually, you know, during the running time of watching this movie, it's a pleasant and funny experience. So, I'm recommending
right.
The Guilt Trip, so there you go.
Colin, when we do the year-end show in a week, be sure to mark that down on Best Surprise on our list.
Yeah.
Nick liking The Guilt Trip.
I'm sorry, I don't know. I just thought it was a very pleasant, funny movie.
I'm going to see it now.
I thought it was entertaining. I did. All right. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us...
Next week we got Parental Guidance.
Oh, God, see now that... I don't think I'm going to be surprised by that one. I can tell you.
Hey, you never know. All bets are off now.
Yeah. Yep. Eric, tell us about The Impossible.
The Impossible, speaking of the tragic events that happened in 2004, this one deals with the enormous tsunami disaster that happened off the coast of Thailand. This film deals with a family that was caught up in that tsunami, a family played by Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, and the three young sons, the oldest of which played by a remarkable young newcomer named Tom Holland. And the film basically it starts off, you know, within 10 minutes, the tsunami hits, and it hits this resort where they're spending Christmas, and we're thrust right into the middle of this thing where Naomi Watts is trapped alone, you know, going upstream in this unbelievable sequence. Searching for her son, the son searching for her, and then spending the second half of the movie sort of recovering from this disaster, and the family trying to reunite with one another to even see if any of them are even still alive. This is a film that I saw at the Toronto Film Festival this year, which I reported about, and I still say it's a pretty remarkable piece of work. The director of the film is Juan Antonio Bayona, whose last and the first film was a film called The Orphanage, a really terrific horror film.
Yep, great film.
A great film that people should seek out. And this one, very much in its own right, is a horror film as well, about a mother trying to reunite with her son and her family. The disaster sequence at the beginning of the movie ranks on par with some of the greatest special effects sequences, disaster sequences we have ever seen on film. Just everything about it is horrifying and extraordinary and sort of awe-inspiring, the technical craft of it. Naomi Watts gives one of the best performances of the year as the mother. This Tom Holland that I mentioned, everyone's talking about Young Miss Wallace from Beasts of the Southern Wild, but for my money, this is the best child performance of the year. It's a pretty terrific piece of work. I know there's some controversy about it, which, you know, we'll probably get into a little bit. But I can't recommend this movie highly enough.
Okay, Colin?
Yeah, I couldn't breathe during the tsunami sequence. I think it's a stunning achievement in special effects, in editing, cinematography. And of course, acting. It really has to be seen on the big screen, and I highly recommend everybody does. But not just for that, but for everything else. The performances are terrific, and you're right, Eric. Tom Holland he's great, and Ewan McGregor too. I mean, everybody's talking about Naomi Watts, but Ewan McGregor is pretty great in this movie too. I mean, there's, you know, a moment where he has to make a decision where he can't win, you know, and it's heartbreaking. I was never less than hypnotized by this movie. I think it's absolutely one of the year's best movies.
Okay, you guys hang on. I'll tell you what I think of it after the news, because we have to hit the news, and we're going to do that right now. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, it's Nick DiGilio here. We are here until 2 a.m. Late Night with Bill Left follows. We'll be back Saturday night for a full show at 6 o'clock. Make sure you tune in on Saturday at 6 p.m. John Williams is going to join us to say goodbye and reminisce about his 15 years here at WGN. Good friend John Williams. And we'll take some phone calls and stuff. If you want to talk to John, he'll be on with me on Saturday starting at 6 o'clock. Right here on WGN. Right now, though, we're in the middle of the Midnight Movie Reviews with Eric and Colin. Guys, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric and Colin both gave their reviews of The Impossible. I'll tell you what I think of it. I like it. I don't love it. I think there are incredible things about it. I think all the performances. This Tom Holland kid, you guys had already said it. He's unbelievable. This kid is unbelievable. Everybody in the movie is really good. Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, great stuff. The tsunami sequence is, as you guys said, unbelievable. It is an incredible, incredible sequence. I think the movie's a bit overlong. And the controversy that you're hinting at, Eric,
mm-hmm.
does it have to do with the fact that they've made it, that it's a movie about a white family?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's an issue I have with the movie. I mean, it's based on a true story, but they changed the family, and I don't know. I realize that, you know, that people want, you know, you want the Western audiences to watch the movie. You want America to go out and see it. But I have issues with that, and I don't like the fact that they changed the ethnicity of the family. I think it's a little bit long, but overall, a powerful film with amazing, heartbreaking moments in it. And again, the tsunami sequence is a knockout. There's no question about it. I am recommending it, but I have a little bit of reservation about it. So now, who's really are people really coming out of the woodwork?
Yeah, no, this has been a complaint since Toronto, and it's precisely on that sort of level, and the idea that, you know, the sort of this privileged, you know, family, you know, were able to get out. But, you know, as colleagues that have fought against it, have been saying that that's also part of the point of the movie, is that this is a privileged family, and that's one of the reasons why they did survive. And I think the final scene, the final shot of the movie, I think pretty much kind of sums it up kind of perfectly. And my issue with this kind of controversy is that it sometimes seems almost random. It seems that it's something that's a very easy criticism that pops up when a lot of people feel like it should be relevant at this time. When I'd be fine with it if there was a consistency to it, but there's not, so I have an issue with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's I'm not discouraging people from seeing it. There's some remarkable stuff in this movie. So that's The Impossible. All right. And Colin, why don't you tell us about Jack Reacher?
All right. Well, this movie opens with what appears to be a lone gunman shooting five people at random from afar, kind of, you know, sniper style. And, you know, maybe he's just that deranged, but it doesn't seem to matter first because the police track him down and lock him up. But the shooter maintains his innocence by requesting the services of Jack Reacher, played by Tom Cruise, who is an ex-military officer and now a very, very private investigator. you don't find Jack Reacher so much as he finds you, that sort of thing. And it turns out Reacher knows this shooter and his history and pretty much dissects and dismantles the case along with the defense attorney, played by Rosamund Pike, and shows more and more layers of doubt that the, you know, police got the right guy. And Reacher is a lot like, a lot of the great noir, a lot of the great detectives, in that he's always two or three steps ahead of everybody else. And Cruise is pretty fun to watch in this role. And then you got Werner Herzog as the heavy, as the bad guy, and that's always a good casting choice. You can't go wrong with that. Always a lot of fun to see that. So this is pretty much a straight-up, unpretentious, noir-type film, based on a popular series of books, which I've never read. And as a diversion at this time of year, it fits in pretty well as a movie that isn't trying to win your awards votes, but also, isn't insulting to the intelligence. It's got some fun action sequences, a lot of fun dialogue, banter, back and forth between Cruise and Pike. I think the movie makes a smart choice in not, belaboring their relationship to the point where they have to fall in love. They sort of sidestep that and avoid that, which I found very refreshing. I think Christopher McQuarrie, he's the guy who wrote The Usual Suspects, and I think he does a good job. I think if there's a more interesting director, writer-director at the helm of this thing, I think it could really fly as a franchise. So maybe if this thing's a hit, and they bring somebody else in to do it, I think, your Joss Whedon type, this could be even better. So it falls short of being something special, but as a nice action diversion at the multiplex, I think it's pretty good.
All right, Eric.
I like it too. I think I have a lot of varying criticisms from what Colin has about the movie.
Christopher McQuarrie, obviously, he wrote Usual Suspects. He directed a film called The Way of the Gun, which I'm quite a big fan of. I think that the material, I think, kind of gets the better of him in a way that I think he's, I've never read these books. They're very popular, but from based on what we see in this movie, it seems like it's pretty much nothing more than your routine airport fodder that you see people reading on a plane, and really nothing more than that. The first half of this movie I like quite a bit, as it sort of diverts, you know, around, you know, what the real mystery is, and, you know, Jack Reacher is doing his thing, and there's some interesting stuff where he tries to, tip the scales of justice, and sort of makes Rosamund Pike's character look through the victim's eyes and stuff. I think that's kind of an interesting choice. And then about halfway through, you want to talk about movies you don't want to think too much about. This thing starts to derail plot-wise, and I couldn't tell you what the bad guy's plot was, why they had to go through all this stuff. It seemed like it's a very Lex Luthor type plot, I must say. I think Tom Cruise is good in the movie. I think Rosamund Pike is pretty bad. I think she is. She's kind of sitting there, and she's got this kind of this. She's either kind of awestruck or, you know, like scared when she's being told to act normal. I don't think she's very good. But there's really some really skillful action sequences in this movie, and I think those sort of keep the film afloat. There's a really terrific car chase in the movie. There's some really great hand-to-hand stuff that Tom Cruise does. There's a hilarious scene where he's attacked in a bathroom. That's really fun to watch. Colin's right that it's a perfect diversion, even though, you know, the timing of it, again, could not be worse considering what happened in Newtown last week.
Yeah.
I saw the movie the morning of that shooting before I was aware of the shooting. So the opening scene, you know, I might want to suggest people sensitive to that and maybe go in 10 minutes later. It's not going to affect your enjoyment of the movie if I'm missing that. But I am recommending it. I do like the movie.
Yeah, I like it too. I thought it was solid. I thought it was fun. I thought Tom Cruise seemed to be having a really good time. And once again, I don't know why I always find myself defending Tom Cruise.
I shouldn't have to.
I shouldn't. The guy's good, man. He makes good movies, and I like him. And I don't care.
No.
I don't care. And I enjoyed this movie. I'm not a huge fan of The Way of the Gun. McQuarrie wrote Valkyrie. Which
that's
was,
right, he did.
Tom Cruise was in that, and I thought that was a really good movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
There are things about this movie I have issues with. You can't argue, like, Colin, I'm so glad that you mentioned Werner Herzog. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, right there, that's worth the price of admission alone right there, because he's such a fantastic lunatic. I thought the action sequences were good in this. It looked like Tom Cruise was having a good time. I think it's a little long. You can cut this movie by about 20 minutes. I think the timing of the release, like you said, Eric, is pretty unfortunate. But it is. I mean, like, exactly. I'm echoing exactly what you guys said. It's a really fun diversion from, three-hour awards movies. You know, which is what we have in the theaters right now. So,
and I think it's really the best proof. Immediately after seeing it, I was telling people, like, this is the reason why Tom Cruise is a movie star and Jason Statham is not.
Right.
You know, like, you can say, like, Jason Statham's in this movie, and it's crap.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Tom Cruise makes this movie fly.
Yep. It's a good point. All right, you guys, hang on. We got more to talk about here. We're reviewing all the new movies in the Midnight Movie Review. Nick DiGilio here live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. If you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Big movie weekend, so we're talking movies. We're in the middle of the Midnight Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. Join me. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Eric, you're the only one who saw the Fitzgerald Family Christmas. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Well, yeah, this is a film that we mentioned. It hit on demand a couple weeks ago, and it's actually opened, exclusively at the Wilmette Theater here in Chicago, so it's playing there if you want to catch it. This is Edward Burns' latest film, and it's a big family story, pretty big cast. And Edward Burns plays a son who is trying to sort of bring all his family together for Christmas. There's a lot of selfish types, a lot of busy types, and whatnot. And he's gotten word from his father, who's been estranged from the family for many, many years, that he wants to join them on this Christmas. And his mother is very opposed to this. The family, many brothers and sisters, have a lot of objections to this. While some want to forgive, some do not. All kinds of issues with marriage and relationships and abuse and all kinds of things going on in this movie. The best way to sort of to simply describe it would be sort of like Edward Burns trying to sort of do, and this is going to, Nick is going to hate this, the Royal Tenenbaums in a way. I know, exactly. sort of the Royal Tenenbaums by way of the Family Stone. There you go. Yeah, so exactly. That's where I get the double one there. Yeah. And that being said, I kind of like the movie. It's a lot better than a lot of Edward Burns' films. A lot of it is due to the cast. I think there's actually some real honesty in this movie. I mean, it's definitely Royal Tenenbaums with all the quirk removed from it. Though it does have some funny stuff in it. I'm surprised as anyone else with it, but I found the movie funny at times. I was actually quite moved by the end of it. I think it's one of his more certainly mature works, he doesn't sort of let his writing get in the way. He lets the actors sort of do their thing, so I am recommending an Edward Burns movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Second big surprise of the night.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we should mention...
It is the end of the world.
We should mention that Monsters, Inc. has been re-released in 3D.
Yeah.
I have not seen it. Colin, Eric, have you guys gone back?
Not yet, but I'd really kind of like to.
Okay.
I'm surprised. They usually screen the 3D reissues for the critics ahead of time, but they're skipping this one for some reason. So.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I mean, obviously I like the movie a lot. I think it's a very funny movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, but there's really some wonderful stuff in this movie, and I enjoy it. Now, when's the sequel coming out for this?
In the summer. Yeah, Monsters University.
Okay, and it's a prequel, right?
Yep. So them in college. Monster College.
In Monster College.
Yes.
Okay, so that'll be out in the summer. So that's Monster, what's it called again?
Monsters University.
Monsters University, okay. All right, well, there you go. And Monsters, Inc. is out. It's in 3D if you want to take the kids to see that. Obviously, all three of us recommend the movie.
Very highly.
All right. Colin, tell us about Rust and Bone.
All right. Well, this tells the story of two unlikely people who fall in a relationship with each other. Marion Cotillard plays an orca whale trainer who suffers a horrible accident on the job in which she has both her legs removed. She had a boyfriend, but now he's out of the picture, so she calls upon a bouncer whom she met in a bar not too long ago. And he's a single father who likes to sleep around with, with women, and the two form a friendship that, you know, eventually becomes sort of a not quite a full relationship, because these two people are so damaged in different ways, their relationship doesn't quite progress as it normally would, since he still likes to sleep around. Marion Cotillard, she won an Academy Award, for people who don't remember, a few years ago for La Vie en Rose. And, she's one of the front runners to be nominated this year for this film. And if there's a reason to see this movie, it's her. My problem is the movie itself, is populated with, characters who are more filled with attitudes than personalities and emotions. You know, whatever scene they're in, that's the sort of attitude that they're supposed to be in. And when the movie like this is populated with these kind of characters who seem sort of indifferent to everything around them, as these characters seem to be, it makes me feel indifferent when watching them. And so I was never really on board with this movie like a lot of other critics were, and mainly because I never really cared about either one of these people. I mean, as much as I tried, they just seemed pretty aloof about everything, and so I was kind of indifferent to the movie itself as a result. So I can't quite really recommend this movie.
Okay. Eric?
I think this movie's a joke. I think this movie is an absolute joke. I'm surprised so many people have been taken in by it, because watching this movie in the moment, and when I walked out, the first thing I thought of was like, well, I just saw a Nicholas Sparks movie in French, because that's exactly what this movie is. The characters, the situations, the melodramatic sort of uplifting stuff and tragic events that happen throughout the movie are you know, ridiculous at best and completely unintentionally hilarious at worst. These characters, especially the character played by Matthias Schoenaerts, who was in a film called Bullhead earlier this year, his character, the bouncer that he's referring to, is a really horrible human being, a terrible father, just a bad friend, just a bad everything. I think it's like, if this movie was in English, it'd be a Nicholas Sparks movie, but because it's in French, everyone seems to be falling for it. The director is Jacques Ardiard, I think is how you pronounce the name. I don't know. His last movie was the crime thriller Profit, which a lot of people were taken in with, too. That was, for my money, the most overrated film of that year. I don't know why people are responding to this the way it does. I mean, it's even as a big Katy Perry song on the soundtrack, like a Nicholas Sparks movie would hear. So I think this movie is absolutely ridiculous, and I can't recommend it at all.
Wow. We saw two different movies, man. I really thought this movie was terrific. I thought Marianne Cotillard was great. I was moved by it. I guess I can see where you're saying it's a Nicholas Sparks thing, but you're talking to a guy who loved The Notebook, so... So there you go.
Those other Nicholas Sparks movies.
Sorry?
Those other Nicholas Sparks movies.
Yeah,
the ones
yeah.
you don't like.
Yeah, I don't like those. But no, I actually really like this movie a lot. I was moved by it. And I was on board. I'm one of these guys who was a sucker for it, Eric. I was, and I think Marion Cotillard is unbelievably great in it. And I think all the performances are good. I was moved by it, and it got me. So, you know, there you go. We got to hit the news, but I'm recommending Rust and Bone kind of highly. So, all right, you guys hang on. We've got one more movie to talk about, and that's This is 40, Judd Apatow's latest. News is coming up next on WGN. Nick DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Tribune Tower. And we've got one more movie to review. If you guys want to join us, you can. It's movie review time. Obviously, towards the end of the year and the holiday season, tons and tons of big movies come out, and this is a big weekend. We also have the movies coming out on Christmas Day, and then we'll review those next Friday on the Midnight Movie Reviews. And then the following week, Eric and Colin are going to come down, and we are going to do our top... movies of the year, the best and the worst. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We decided January 5th, correct, guys?
Yeah, yep. Saturday, right?
Saturday, January 5th. Mm-hmm. And you guys will come down, and I'm guessing we have a full show that night. I don't even know. Do we know? We don't even know. Do we have a full show? It's not up yet. I don't even think the calendar's up yet for the January 5th. But anyway, we'll figure out the time, but you guys will come down live in studio, and we'll do it.
Can't wait.
All right, cool. One more movie to talk about here. It's a full show, so you guys, why don't you guys come down at 10? We'll do it Saturday, January 5th at 10, okay? And we'll keep you guys on for a while, and we'll do the full review and, you know, all the little tidbits that we do and the best and the worst and all that cool stuff. So
fantastic.
Always a lot of fun when you guys come down and do that every year. All right, here we go. Let's, Eric, tell us about This is 40.
Okay, this is Judd Apatow's latest directing effort. As you've seen, it has been advertised as the sort of sequel to Knocked Up, in that it doesn't deal with the Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl characters. In fact, it doesn't even mention them at all. It deals with the Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann couple and their two young daughters. It's 5 years after the events of Knocked Up, and Leslie Mann's character is turning 40, though she kind of denies the fact and just wants to be 38 forever. And they're going through, you know, this sort of an expansion upon the problems that they were having in the first in Knocked Up. This time, the various complications are arising, both there's sexual, financial, and also some of the stuff involving both sets of their parents, mainly their fathers. Albert Brooks plays Paul Rudd's father, who is kind of a moocher in a way. He's well off. He's married and has some new children of his own. But he does sort of mooch money off of Paul Rudd's character behind his wife's back. And Leslie Mann, her father's played by John Lithgow, who has pretty much abandoned her family many years ago and kind of just shows up every once in a while. So all these problems are going on, and there are a myriad of subplots throughout the movie, one involving Leslie Mann's store, that there might be some theft going on that might involve an employee played by Megan Fox. Paul Rudd is desperately trying to keep his music talent career afloat by signing Graham Parker, which is not exactly the hippest choice in a Lady Gaga type world. So all these things are going on, and their children are growing up too fast, and so they have all that stuff to deal with. If you're looking for a movie that is sort of the definitive take on what it's like to be 40, to turn 40, or to just be in your 40s, this probably isn't it. When we discuss the flaws of the movie, and I'm sure we'll be hearing about them very soon, they're flaws that I really cannot argue with. I totally admit that this is a completely flawed movie, particularly in the first half, where these complications, these secrets that they are keeping from each other, just it seems a little sitcom-y. Though I do buy the parental relationships involving Albert Brooks and John Lithgow, both of whom I think are both very good in the movie. But the bottom line is that I found this movie to be unbelievably funny. I laughed hard throughout this entire movie, so hard that I had to stop. we all got screeners of this thing, and I had to stop the movie a couple times because I was laughing so hard. There's everyone really gets in on it. Everyone has big laugh lines. Megan Fox has laugh lines in this movie, as far as I'm concerned. And Jason Segel, the only other characters who appear from Knocked Up are Jason Segel's character, who's now a personal trainer to Leslie Mann, who has maybe the funniest punchline of the year in this movie, and Charlene Yee, who played one of the stoner people in the Seth Rogen household, she is now working for Leslie Mann, and that's also part of one of the big flaws of that subplot, which is probably the worst of the movie. But I cannot deny how hard I laughed during this movie, this incredibly incredibly flawed movie. But just based on that, if I'm recommending it just on how hard I laughed, it's a very hearty recommendation.
Okay, Colin.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same wavelength as Eric, and that when the movie started out, I really did not like these people, you know, and I sort of wanted a tsunami to hit them, but as it got going, you know, the thing is, like Eric was saying, yeah, the flaws about turning 40 and all that, which I did a couple months ago, it's not that big of a deal. You know, so I right away, the movie just opens with these two whining about turning 40, and I was just, it's so off-putting. And, you know, especially since they're doing pretty well, they got their, you know, careers going, and, you know, they got a nice house and nice kids and everything. Like, what have you really got to whine about? But then, like Eric says, as the movie got going, I was laughing a little bit more, and I think Leslie Mann has some really nice moments. You know, she turns in, I think, a really good performance in this movie. And I started to find myself being a little more forgiving of it, in spite of the fact that, you know, it's got all these problems as a script. I think it's Apatow's weakest movie. And I thought Funny People was pretty weak too. But that at least I think has a little bit more depth to it. And this one is pretty much everything's on the surface. But like Eric said, a lot of laughs in this movie. If you're, you know, as a recommendation, yeah, I'd say don't expect realism, but expect some laughs and nothing more. And I think you might have a good time. So, yeah, I recommend it, you know, with a lot of reservations.
Okay. I think this is one of the worst movies of the year. I absolutely hated this movie. Hated it. All the stuff that I found the flaws in the earlier Apatow movies, especially in Funny People. Here's the thing. Here's my message to Judd Apatow. I don't give a damn about your kids. I don't want to see your kids in a movie for an hour and a half. I don't care. They're not very good. I don't care. I don't care that Leslie Mann is your wife. This is one of the most self-indulgent movies I've ever seen. I didn't think any of it was funny. I think I laughed three times, twice probably at Albert Brooks. And I laughed at the end when they had the outtakes, Melissa McCarthy outtakes at the end. I thought that was funny. This is a shapeless movie. The script is terrible. It just meanders. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes long. And I know that Apatow tends to make long movies, and sometimes they need to be trimmed a little bit. You know, Knocked Up could have used a few minutes cut from it. I still think the single best movie he's ever made, and I think ever will make, is The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which right out of the gate, he just knocked that one out of the park. I didn't like the characters. You know, Colin, you said at the beginning of the movie they were grating on you. I hated them throughout the entire movie. I didn't care about their problems. And I thought a lot of it was just false. It didn't ring true to me at all. Throwing in your friends in the movie and then letting them just meander around like Apatow does, sometimes that pays off. But it's gotten to the point now where he's just letting anybody say anything. And a lot of it's not funny. What's the Asian girl's name again?
Charlene Yee.
Yeah, she's terrible in this, I thought. The scene that she has in the coffee shop with Leslie Mann is like way over the top and not funny. And obviously Apatow just like said, okay, here's my wife and here's a friend of mine. You guys do whatever the hell you want and I'll make it 2 hours and 15 minutes long. Here are my kids. I'm just going to let you guys say whatever the hell you want to say. And when you got a guy like Albert Brooks and you allow him to say things, you know, like I'll see you the next time when the Cubs win the pennant, you know, that's funny. But I didn't buy the relationship between anybody in this movie or anything. I found it insufferable, and I almost turned it off around three or four times. I just sat on the couch just tearing my hair out during this movie, and I didn't laugh at all. I think it's absolutely one of the worst movies of the year. And everything that was wrong, every direction that that Apatow took in the wrong direction with Funny People, he has just floored it in that direction with this movie and gone completely in the worst possible, all the bad things about Funny People, all the things I hated about Funny People, it's times 100 in this movie. I'm a fan of Apatow, and again, I love Knocked Up. I absolutely adore 40-Year-Old Virgin, but this one, I absolutely found it insufferable. So, there you have it. Yeah. I don't know what to say. So outside of that, but I mean, what do you think this thing is going to do, Eric? You think it's going to make a lot of money?
No, I don't. I don't. For some reason, and I don't, know quite why, people don't go see Paul Rudd's movies. You know,
which
I mean,
is really...
Role Models did pretty well,
yeah.
But you know, nobody went and saw Wanderlust.
Yeah.
At all. I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, I don't know why people haven't sort of, you know, I mean, you mentioned his name and people kind of smile, but the box office dollars don't really reflect it.
That's too
bad. You know, I mean, he's been Knocked Up and
yeah.
whatnot, but 40-Year-Old Virgin did pretty well.
How did I Love You Man do?
I Love You Man did pretty well. I Love You Man did like 60-some million, I think.
Yeah.
That one did pretty well.
Well, that was coming off of, like, that was coming off, but that was Siegel coming off of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, though, as well. Wasn't
yes.
it? Yeah.
Yes. So there was that, and then it was a spring release. I mean, it has the advantage that it's coming out during the holidays, so people have a little, a little more time on their hands, a little extra money to spend. Of all the movies out there, I mean, it's what this, Guilt Trip, Parental Guidance, those are your comedies.
Right.
And whatnot. Now, granted, I have not seen The Guilt Trip, but, you know, This Is 40, you know, to me is about as funny as it gets.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. I don't know. I was in pain during the entire movie.
Here's a legitimate question for you, Nick.
Yeah.
Just a real legitimate question.
Yeah.
What did he do in this movie as opposed to, like, you like these two characters in Knocked Up, correct?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I liked... Yeah, I did. I did. I found their characters to be the kids and everything to be the most unlikable characters in the movie. Even though like Seth Rogen is pretty much of a bum in that movie. But what I liked most about it in Knocked Up was the relationship between Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen. Like that stuff to me was really funny. There's a scene in this movie. Where I think they're trying to duplicate what they did in Knocked Up. There's the scene where they, speaking of Cirque du Soleil, there's the scene in Knocked Up where they take mushrooms and they go see Cirque du Soleil and then they go back to the hotel room and they freak out.
Yeah.
That scene is hilarious. They do a scene in this movie where Leslie Mann and Paul Rudd eat hash brownies or pot brownies.
Right.
And that scene sucks. It's not funny. And it just seemed to me like a pale imitation of what was so funny and Knocked Up when they did the shrooms. But
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. And I think that the scene you remarked about the coffee shop with Charlene Yee is maybe the worst scene in the movie just because, you know, if that character is the character from the first movie, you know that character to be a raging stoner.
Right. Exactly.
So the revelations about her character in this movie should not be a surprise to anyone.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. And it's just, yeah, I found, and you know, this is the first movie, you know, you're speaking of Paul Rudd. I love Paul Rudd. I think Paul Rudd is great, and I like him in everything. I just didn't like him in this. I didn't like his character. I found them both really annoying, and I like Leslie Mann as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found them really annoying, and I just was like, okay, dude, here you know, let's have your daughter do a monologue about Lost again and see how unfunny that is. And I just, it drove me nuts. It drove me nuts. So, anyway. All right. Well, what do we got? We got Django.
We got Django. Well, we got
Parental Guidance. And
there's another big one.
Another big one's opening on Christmas.
Les Mis.
Oh, God, yeah, Les Mis.
Yeah.
That's a big one. All right,
yeah.
So you guys have a great Christmas, and I will talk to you next Friday, and we'll review the big movies that are coming out on Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas, guys.
All right, you guys, take care.
Okay,
all right, there you go. See you later. There are those guys right there, Colin and Eric, always reviewing the movies on Friday night, the Midnight Movie Reviews.